In J. Allen Hynek's 1972 book, The UFO Experience, A Scientific Inquiry, UFO and extraterrestrial encounters were classified into three distinct categories. Beyond this original classification by the head of the Air Force's Project Blue Book, other scientists following in Hynek's footsteps would later add an additional four categories. Within these additional classifications, you have what are deemed close encounters of the fourth kind. These experiences are characterized by humans being physically abducted by extraterrestrials. Some scientists argue this category should also include experiences where the witness has their reality transformed. Perhaps a near-perfect example of this type of encounter would be the events that took place in 1967 in the town of South Ashburnham, Massachusetts. A case that was marked with such high strangeness that J. Allen Hynek had declined to interview the witness. Only 10 years later would notable UFO investigator Raymond Fowler document the incredible experience as details were obtained from numerous sessions of regression hypnotherapy. This case file joined the theorists as they go gaga for quasga in the Andreessen abduction case.
To Alien Theorist Theorizing 147, The Andreessen Affair. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Well, back by popular demand.
Why did you do
my
that?
Hiatus.
As soon as they heard your voice screaming, I'm back. Everybody's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, we lost. Skip about, it. We lost about 100 listeners right there.
Yeah, right.
Thought he was gone.
Doubled. Number one's back.
They're like,
baby.
Man, this podcast was just getting good.
Yeah.
Just starting
you,
to step
you know
up.
What? You, Dan, from what I hear, you were right. One is close to zero because when one's gone, the rest of y'all are zeros.
Have you been saving that, eh?
Boom. He's been working on my desk for a week.
Working on that.
Better yet, you know, the guy got so upset with the brand new Randomatron option, the Beak Braden option, he broke it.
Yeah.
Doesn't even fucking work anymore.
Smashed it.
Wait, you guys did a Beak Braden option? I didn't get told that.
And you pouted and you broke it.
Yeah. It was a good one. It was one of the best segments we've ever done.
You guys
done.
Are going to make me, you're going to have, you guys are going to make me listen to a whole episode where I don't get to listen to my own voice. Are you kidding me? I can't sit through that.
It's one more than I've listened to, so that's good.
Yeah. Andreessen Affair. This one's awesome.
Yeah, it's
I love this
cool abduction case.
Why don't we get right into it?
Straight into it.
The Andreessen abduction case comes from us. The event in question that we're going to talk about took place on what was January 25th, 1967 in the small town of South Ashburnham, Massachusetts.
I looked up two things about this because it said that this happened at 6:30 p.m. The night of the abduction. And I was like, 6:30 p.m. January, like in Massachusetts, I had to look up, and that is 6:36, January 25th, 1967, was actually the astronomical twilight, which is the darkest part of the night. So it was dark, because I was like, maybe it was, how dark was
darkness.
It?
Darkness.
Right.
And according to weather reports, it was also, that place was well known
for
cold fog.
As fuck.
For fog?
Right? Cold, yeah, fog was also a common occurrence in this area, so that'll play a part later. So the report of the abduction comes from Betty Andreessen. Betty Andreessen was a mother of seven children at the time. Her husband, the month before this, had a pretty bad car accident. He was actually in the hospital at the time. So her two parents, her mother and father, were also in the house, helping with the family and the housework and things like in order to kind of take some of the burden off of just Betty. So what seemed to happen, what kind of kicked off the whole thing, is that at this time you had the lights, you know, around then sometime 6:30 around in the evening started to blink. you had this red, you had this red light that beamed into the house, so through the kitchen window. I'm assuming it's something similar. If you've ever seen Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, this is what you get during the kind of like when the aliens come to the house.
So we had like an electrical interference, like all the lights in the house, like all the
lights, TV,
from all
everything.
Accounts, everything was just flickering and kind of going a little. It didn't really say like it wasn't like violently or anything, but it painted the picture in my head from everything I read that everything was just doing that flickering enough that you would do the like the little maybe the side eye and everything and be like, what the hell's going on? And all of a sudden would be very startled by a giant bright red light coming from your kitchen window.
What year was this? Sorry, again, what was the year?
City
1967.
1967. Oh, so before the movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh,
okay.
That's there fair. You go. Okay. That's good.
Okay.
Okay.
So, according to the story, Betty's father ran to go look outside of the kitchen window from where the light had been seen coming. So he is reported to have seen what seemed to be five strange looking creatures walking towards the house, but not so much walking as there was, they described some sort of hopping motion. And from what we can gather from the father, because there's kind of conflicting reports of whether the father really wanted to talk about this thing. He was very hesitant to come forward at first. Betty remarked that when she tried to talk with him about it after the fact, at least a year after the event had happened and she kind of started remembering things, he didn't want to talk about it.
Well, but she said like there was a little bit of, there were some lame excuses. She said that he was worried about, you know, potentially losing his income checks, his, you know what I mean? Cause I guess he was,
cause they thought he would have been crazy.
They thought he was crazy. And they, you know what I mean? They're like, well, and you know what I mean? Like I'm a man. So obviously they're going to make me the center of attention and go after me and make this all about me.
He was like
so.
A stereotypical old guy in 1967, like survived the Great Depression.
Hardened man.
I mean, he was an immigrant. Hardened. Like he had immigrated at a young age from, I think it was Finland. Him and his family.
Finland? Oh, yeah. And everyone knows Finnish. Those are hard men.
They bath in ice water.
Hard men, eh, Braden?
Yeah. Hard men.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Yeah.
What were you doing on your vacation again? Yeah. What was happening? Why were you here? What were you up to?
Huh?
I don't know.
Undisclosed.
Undisclosed. Yeah. Cannot tell us.
So.
Learning the art of the Finnish massage.
So another surprising thing happened is that when these creatures reached the back door, what they appeared to do is they didn't open it so much as they simply seemed to walk through it, just phase through the wooden door right into the house.
Vision style.
Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
And it's at this point that the entire family is put into what can be described as either a trance or some type of suspended animation is what
can
kind of be described.
Can we also, let's talk about their appearance for a second, because goddamn, were they looking fly.
Well, the biggest thing that jumped out to me when she was described, like I was listening to an interview and she's describing them and I heard like, it was enough for me to be like, this is it. I love it. First thing she described was them wearing silver suits, and I just heard Herbie Hancock. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. There's varying reports because I saw the silver suits, but the one that I loved was blue overalls with a nice white belt and a white sash going over with their little bird crest on either side as they hi-hoed into the living room.
Like a sash? Like we're talking like fucking...
A pageant sash?
Yeah, like what do we
mean?
Yeah,
yeah. Like, well, I'm guessing it like went from one from the white belt over a shoulder and then back down the other. But goddamn, I need to get my hands on one of these suits because all the artist rendition. I'm assuming that when the artist is drawing the UFO, they're showing Betty and be like, "Is this what they look like? And what do I need to change?" And Betty must have been like, "Can you give them some badonkadonks? I want little alien booties. Like they were tight." Those things were tight. I could see them all. They were thick boys, little thick boys. Every single one of those artist rendition is just such a prominent little alien butt. I was like, man, god damn, those pants are really working for those little.
You're very
tight peach.
You're very fucking sexually charged tonight, bro.
Yeah, you are.
Hard men and hard men. Thick, tight booties and shit. Like, what's going on with you, man?
Alien booties.
You went to one of those islands, didn't you? You went to one of those hedonism islands or whatever. Sandals. The adult side of sandals.
You would have a
sandals.
Problem with this, wouldn't you?
So Braden just got back from Fire Island.
Yeah. Hedonism too.
Misplaced his keys, if you know what I mean.
So these creatures were like, what were they? About 4 feet tall, most of them. And then they thought one might have been the leader because it stood a foot taller.
Right. He was the tallest. So why? Therefore,
they tallest. His words, not ours. No one jump on all over us. This is their words.
Whose words? Betty's?
Father, I think.
Oh, the father. Fuck him. He's wrong. Get rid of him.
Cancel him.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, how, like, you could, like, by that structure, leadership structure, you could lead this pack.
But I'd be dunking on those guys 4 feet. Oh, man.
You'd be like the Monstars.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I want it. That's the plan I want to
be. Yeah, right. These aliens are probably like Muggsy Bogues. They'd be jumping over your head.
So the other thing that the aliens, the first thing that I noticed in this story is that they've been described as, the father said they were hopping. They seem to be hopping.
Yeah.
And then when they come through the door, they don't even walk. They just glide through the air, baby. Just smooth as silk. Just float around. I just imagine they just throw their arms back and they just throw their head and they just shoot chest forward, sliding everywhere. That's what I pictured in my head. But I thought that was interesting because it was such a unique way for the dead to describe them coming in. Like they were hopping or something, walking. And then when they come through the door, they floated. They didn't walk. They floated. Nimbly bimbly.
Right. Yeah. So we get the description from both Betty and her father of these creatures, which, like Zell said before, you had about four, which seemed to be about 4 feet in height. And you had a fifth that seemed to be about a foot taller. So about standing at about 5 feet tall. Their descriptions are, they had the very wide eyes, small ears and noses, set in these kind of giant pear shaped heads. And they didn't have so much mouths as there was just like tiny slits. So no lips, no nothing like that. And it seemed to be that they communicated with their minds. Telepathy plays a big part in this entire,
it's the grays.
Mental telepathy.
It's the short grays, pretty much.
Right. So it's very it's very typical of your grays, except, you know, they're wearing clothes. So
yeah, clothes. They had cute little moon boots.
Sashes, apparently.
Sashes. You know, they did have the pear-shaped head, the big black eyes, but just little slits for mouth that she described as looking like scars.
Right.
Yeah. So they also, their hands, she noted that they also had only like three-fingered hands. So it's like two, you know, just basically like a thumb and then two other, you know, appendages.
So one of those little fucking hands.
This is my strong arm. My strong arm. Yeah. Let me stir it for you.
So this, after this, what after the description of the aliens and the family is put into this kind of suspended animation state, you kind of lose most of the father's recollection of what happens. He kind of, you know, either they pause, they put everybody on pause except Betty. Now, the rest of the information that we get is from hypnotic regression sessions with Betty. That occurred in 1977. So 10 years after the fact, she met with an investigator, Jules Valancourt from MUFON, who also put her in contact with hypnotist Harold Edelstein of the New England Institute of Hypnosis. And so together they brought her, you know, it's something like a 2-hour drive from where she was living, but she was happy to do it at the time. And so the rest of the information we get is from them, you know, putting her into these regressive hypnotic states and then having her relive these events.
And this isn't just like, oh, hey, come sit in this chair for an hour. We're going to do this. They like investigated her and her claims for like 12 months. This is one of the most investigated cases ever reported in the annals of hypnotherapy.
In the annals?
What?
In the annals of hypnotherapy. Am I saying that wrong?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. There's a better word for it.
The anals.
I'm sure it's of annals, but you might have something else on the mind. So
annals? A-N-N-A-L-S?
Yes. Oh, two N's? Annals.
Yeah. Annals. Yeah. Oh.
Annals, sure.
Jesus.
That's embarrassing.
Okay, wait. So the aliens come in. They freeze the whole family in suspended animation, except for Betty. But that's the last thing she remembers from that night. The rest comes from later on.
Right. So... But also they froze Betty, but there's also a report from they had Becky, the oldest daughter, who was, I think, 11 at the time. She also contributed some to the narrative. Like, she remembered some of these things. Like, she definitely remembered parts and pieces of it.
From what I heard from Betty in the interview was she was really concerned for her family. And they're like, listen, you're okay. Everybody's safe. Watch. And like, they got Becky to stand up. To show her that, you know what I mean? Like, that she was still okay.
They took her out of the trance.
And then sat her down. And then obviously later we're going to learn about something that they were giving. And Becky plays a role in that too.
So to show them that they didn't mean harm, they like, hey, your kids are going to be fine. Watch this.
Yeah, look.
Yeah.
Look this. And then put her back to sleep.
Which is weird to me though. So like, is the reason why like nobody got frozen until they visioned through the fucking door? And the only reason the dad knows what's up is because he was with Betty and saw it happen? Is that why none of the other family?
They couldn't really see the door from where they were sitting. I think most of the kids were in the TV room or out, like they weren't in the kitchen because they came through the back of the back of the house, the back door that led out to the backyard into the kitchen. And you couldn't really see. You couldn't see from inside the TV room or wherever most of the kids were. That door. So once the beings entered the house, I believe that's when everybody was put into suspended animation.
So kids were watching the Brady Bunch.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. And then the parents, you know, okay, I get you.
Okay. So she gets this hypnosis, regression hypnosis. And what does she find out?
So the beings, again, like we said, they seemed to communicate with her through telepathy. Their mouths didn't move. It was more that she got a kind of, they communicated so much in, both, I guess, like in like an empathic kind of way. They could convey feelings, but they could also convey like specific ideas, like
ESPN.
They would ask her for questions.
Basically.
Yes, essentially. So. What they ask her for, they asked her for something to eat is the next thing.
Like the aliens asked her for something. Wait, are we getting some saltless pancakes here? Is that what's about to happen? We got silver suits. Barbecue. Okay, so does she feed them?
So she does. She does prepare some food for them. Believe she prepared some food for them, and then when she placed the food in front of them, they said, "No, not this food. It has to be burnt." Was what she got.
Oh, this is awesome!
I thought from what I like when I heard the interview, she said she misunderstood them when they asked for food. She thought they meant food, but they actually meant knowledge.
Yeah, and I was getting to that. So I was saying that,
I'm like.
She's cooking and gives it, and they're like, "What the fuck?"
What if, like, you know what the better story would be? It was just these fucking aliens chose this planet to come, and they're like, "We're gonna pick a fucking random house, and this is the alien fucking Gordon Ramsay," and he's like, "Listen, you fucking on the clock, make me something tasty." And this gives her some fucking tastes it, and he's like, "Literally rubbish, rubbish." Just
intergalactic
at her.
Top chef.
Yeah, show us what you got.
I like that
disqualified.
Too,
because, there's one every season.
Is this pre or post Italian pancakes? I don't remember what year that happened. But here, now, quick little side theory: if this is pre Italian pancakes, these guys come down. She cooks them food in her like half trance nervousness, burns the shit out of these pancakes, but they love it. They've never had. They're like, "This is, we've never had anything like this.
Oh, this is very
it's so good." So then later, when we're seeing the barbecue, that's them. They've taken the recipe from Betty.
Just burning it.
Listening to Herbie Hancock in their.
So, you know, so like Andrew said, it may have been some sort of actual miscommunication. And at this point, if this was the first thing that these aliens were communicating to her, perhaps like their you know, whatever wavelength they were on wasn't exactly syncing up. So maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe they needed a little bit more time to kind of adjust their, you know, telepathy, mind waves. I don't know, something like that. But she said that they had to clarify that they meant, like Andrew said, knowledge. Like they wanted something that had been tested in the fire of knowledge or something to that effect. And so Betty was a very devout, and she was a very pretty staunch Christian, you know, very, you know, not Bible thumper, but she's definitely, you know, go to church and, you know, had faith in the Christian beliefs and all those things. So she interpreted this to mean the Bible. That is what she kind of.
So hold on. What you're telling me here is that this is intergalactic Jehovah's Witness, is what you're saying.
I mean, but like
instead of knocking the these opposite. Phase through their door,
and they,
well,
they
finally, you have to let them in.
They finally,
it's genius. Yeah, we, you can't keep them outside.
They finally figured out how to give the good news.
Excuse me, they're like, ma'am, we freeze you. Have you heard the good news?
Well, she gives them the Bible, so she gives them the Bible.
Have you seen the light?
The bright shining light.
Where can we find the answers to life's greatest questions? Why do we suffer?
We will tell you the well.
We believe the good light is for all beings. The
it.
One tells us to rub the light all over. Ooh wee.
We believe the, all the good light is for all beings.
So they went, go ahead, and she gives them the Bible, and in return, they gave her something else. They
the blue book.
It's either they turned the, I think they actually turned the Bible into something else, where they kind of touched it, and then the Bible turned into another book.
Well, she said they multiplied it. They, like, from where they touched it, and then it just, like, a bunch of different duplicates of it appeared.
Right. And she did remark later that she's like, she doesn't know whose Bible it was. I guess every kid in the family had a Bible, or close to every kid had a Bible. And she said that one of them was missing after the fact. So they used that by either they used that Bible in some sort of like matter transfer, multiplication, whatever. But she received this blue book.
Think about how much fucking cooler it would have been if they're like, knowledge, you want fucking knowledge? Like, can I give you this book of made up stories, or can I give you a fucking comic of Spider-Man? That shit is going to blow your fucking mind.
Gives my first edition Spider-Man.
Right? That would be way cooler. It would have been like, this is fucking wicked. This is awesome. Who's
this is a lot
Jesus
more valuable.
You have Peter Parker.
This is a lot more valuable.
One guy walks take on this. Water, the other guy fucking swings through buildings and beats bad guys up.
Shoots webs out of his hand. And
that's badass.
Super it, badass.
I would I mean, say that
Jesus beats
maybe,
bad guys up too.
Maybe if
Does he? Who does he beat up?
Yeah, Jesus in the temple people? When he kicked out all the gamblers.
What comics
I mean, come
do
on,
you
listen,
read?
Bad guys.
I don't know.
What comics do you
I mean,
read?
I mean,
Calablamo.
One of them lost. One of them didn't.
That's funny.
I guess they've both been resurrected. That's fair. That's
yeah, true. Peter died at one point.
Yeah, a couple times.
Spoilers.
Or more than one. More than one time. He died a whole bunch of times.
So. Yeah, but he keeps coming back.
He's better than Jesus.
I've
multiple
yeah,
resurrections.
More than once.
It would kind of make sense to me, though, like she gives them the Bible, and like say if they're at a level where they, you know, they're traveling through space, they've got mental telepathy. Maybe when she hands them the Bible, they turn it, like just by them touching it, they're like, we know everything in it. So using those references that she's now given them, because, you know, we know that like the conversation wasn't really lining up earlier when she was making burnt food for them. Maybe they use images from the Bible to like convey a message to her
maybe
later on. Cause what she says later kind of is like, she says it was like a religious experience, but I never thought this before, but now that we're talking about it, I'm thinking that like she handed them this book before she has like this next experience. So maybe that's what they conveyed. It's kind of like how in Contact, when Jodie Foster goes, they convey it like as her. They're like, is this real? Like, no, we just thought this is the easiest way to like show you.
All I know,
dead father.
All I know is they probably haven't been back since. She probably chose the wrong book. They probably made it through like five pages of the only begotten son of this person and that person and this person. They're like, this is terrible. I can't read this.
Turned around.
If they only, if they only read numbers, I mean, are they, like, some of the Bible is pretty rad. I'll tell you that. Like, some of it's pretty crazy.
Not the first little bit. Genesis.
All right. So this is all happening still in the house. Well, everyone's frozen.
The book they're still in the house at this point. So after they give her the blue book, they pretty much invite her back to the ship and they say, leave the blue book here for now. We're going to take you. You've been chosen in so much.
And she went willingly, right? Because apparently she felt this like peace. You know what I mean? They had this very like peaceful vibe about them.
Right. A type of peace. And there's also kind of like this kind of compulsion, I think she felt to, in order to go with them. You know, it wasn't so much, it wasn't a command. They didn't say like, go with us. You know, like they're like, please come with us.
Yeah, they didn't have to because they have fucking mind control techniques.
No, it doesn't matter. They could have mind control. They could have $1 million. They could have a fucking spaceship full of Spider-Man comics, mongooses, puppet dogs, all the cool shit. I'm not going in there.
I would not want to be in a spaceship full of mongooses.
I would. They know me. They trust me.
Yeah, but how cute were those outfits?
Yeah, well, they did have sashes. They did kind of look like Fred from Scooby-Doo. Or no, those are ascots.
Those are ascots.
Yeah, ascots.
What is a sash? Zell, can you pull up a picture of a sash?
It's like a Miss Universe. Think of like a beauty pageant.
Okay, look
sash.
At this.
It's like what Worf wears.
This
it's
is
like
them.
What Worf wears.
This is the aliens.
Like, come on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's the aliens coming through.
Yeah, so they look like fucking SS members. I wouldn't be going in there with them. That's terrifying.
Yeah, pull up. Hey, pull up that picture with them in the where.
Show
they
me some
papers. All their little cute little butts.
No, Braden, enough. Go have a cold fucking shower. Enough of the butts and the anals and everything. Jesus. You didn't get it out of your system?
It's pronounced annals.
You didn't get it out of your system at fucking Sandals Resort Adult Edition?
Hedonism too.
Yeah.
You never listen to me.
Oh, I tone it out for a reason. Scary.
Okay, so now they get on board the ship. Let's get there. Let's get onto the ship.
So... their means of conveyance mostly is for them to float. They don't walk anywhere, seems like. So I don't even know why they have legs, but they float everywhere. It's not, you know, she described a motion like they kind of would just get in a kind of follow the leader type of, you know, one by one line. And then just off they would go. Just zoop. All right. So they floated her out the back door, same way as they came in. They kind of phased through her with her as well. So they didn't open it for her. So it must be some sort of technology that you can either project or whatever to onto anybody. And they just went through the door. They entered into this ship, which had been parked in her backyard. You know, this was in the middle of a town. So she had neighbors and things like this. So during the hypnotic regression, they asked her, you know, what about your neighbors? What the fuck were they doing? Like, you got this light up disco ball spaceship coming down into your things. Like, what happened in there? And she described it that there was very kind of like a heavy fog, which is, you know, when they checked the weather for that time, they said, okay, yeah, there is that place is known for quite a lot of fog.
Maybe they froze everyone in the neighborhood.
Maybe also she didn't go into their houses. She couldn't possibly see them. So perhaps they, you know, it was a whole neighborhood wide freeze. Who knows?
Just the whole block. They just snapped their fingers and they all sat there at the table, like half eating while it's all happening.
Like click.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what they got. Maybe they got the remote.
Oh, shit. Cracked it.
Done. Figured it out. Bunch of alien race of Adam Sandlers.
So she floats into the ship through what looks to be some sort of doorway with stairs. I don't think at this point the tallest alien had introduced itself. I think she had asked before, like, what is your name? What do I call you? And he introduced himself as Quazga. Oh,
Quazga?
Quazga. So Quazgaa is what his name was.
Quazga.
So she said really when they entered into the ship, like he was able to, you know, with a motion of his hand to turn the bottom of the ship transparent.
Yeah.
And she saw some stuff like inside the ship. I think she described seeing some what seemed to be like some mechanisms and things like that.
He waved his hand.
He's like, impressed? This isn't even the beginning.
He waved his hand and the ship went transparent. And then
the
like,
bottom of the ship. That's what she described. And then
there we go.
Yeah. And then he waved his hand again. And then it turned back into a type of like a silvery gold color.
Meanwhile, one of those little guys is behind flipping the light switch.
And now.
He does this every time.
Oh, the monkeys get a kick out of this one. When they moved inside of the ship, it seemed to be some sort of waiting area is what she described, and it's shaped like a kind of half bubble. She didn't see really any openings or anything like this. And so the beings all kind of, she's kind of like, you can imagine she's standing in the doorway. They've shut the door, and then all the beings seem to be conversing at this point. They kind of were all kind of talking together, putting their heads together and, discussing something. And Betty remembers at this point, she said she was kind of getting, vexed at this, like, why are they keeping me waiting? She would cross, she described like crossing her arms.
She's getting impatient with the alien.
Yeah, like
it's ballsy, Betty. Come on. That's like, fucking ballsy.
Where's the probe?
So quickly unimpressed. So they're just doing magic.
So the most of the beings left except for Chu and Quazga. So Quazga made some remark about him having to go and prepare himself, and so for something, he didn't really elaborate on what. And he
right there before you get into what he was preparing himself for, let's take a quick beer break. Because I think we all need to talk.
Brain's gonna have a cold shower. All
right. We'll be right back. Everybody.
Quick rinse.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
All right, we're back. Smooth.
So, fucking Case Swibbles was just getting ready for her. That's what he said, right? What's his name again?
Quasadilla. Quasadilla.
It's scary though. Some guys like he's like, listen, I gotta go get ready. Like you just stay here. That's terrifying.
And he's already in a flowing white robe
with
and he's
a sash. Like
let me go get into something a little
scary
more
to me. That feels like he's gonna come out with like Wild Horses playing. Wild horses. You know, like that's scary.
So before all that happens, he sends her off with two beings to escort her up a set of stairs, which open up into another doorway. And she remarked at this, like these, it's weird how she describes a ship, because this ship must be some kind of TARDIS bullshit, because it's like bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Dude, I think she described the ship being maybe 20 feet, which is actually pretty big. That's like what, two-story house?
Yeah, and it's powered by two twin Peloton bikes at the bottom.
Yeah, I was looking at, when I read it, it said 20 feet. And then Dan sent me a picture of the ship, and I was like, how does this all fit in here? So if you're watching the live stream, let's go through it. So as you walk into the ship, there's an entry hall, a staircase, a walkway to a control room, a cleansing area, an elevator, and a hatch.
Okay, listen.
An elevator?
There's an upper deck, more stairs.
How long was this chick in the spaceship for?
I think she describes all of the events that happened to her, because as we talk more, but everything happened over the course of about, she said, felt like 4 hours, I think is what she said.
So in 4 hours, she knows this. Buddy, she knows this fucking spaceship inside and out like that. That's only fucking ridiculous.
It's only 20 feet. So
yeah, but look how fucking detailed that little drawing was. Like, that's
But if these guys are
But that's from her memory. That's from, you know, she's just trying to put it in there, I would assume. Oh, man.
So there's actually three floors. There's the main deck, the bottom deck with the Peloton bikes, and the top floor has a hallway.
Tell me those aren't bikes.
Listen.
Those are fucking bikes. They're powering the spaceship.
So what, like, took her on a grand fucking tour? It looks like they put on an episode of fucking Cribs for her. She like saw the entire fucking
thing. No wonder they want to float everywhere if they're on Peloton bikes, like, you know, shoot that, into the universe.
Put
that
picture back up, Zelf.
I wouldn't walk either.
No wonder why they got those cute little buns in those little suits.
Buddy,
rocking
listen,
those Peloton bikes.
You can see on that picture that Zell's going to put up right there, there's a big screen TV with Scarface on it. This is an episode of fucking Alien Cribs. I've seen it.
Where do you see the TV?
It's up there.
Hey, what are the odds we can sell this show to Peloton?
This episode sponsored by.
I'd love one of those bikes. That'd be awesome.
The power of the spaceship.
She definitely described moving about through the ship, and the doors and the entryways that she described was like you couldn't see them. Like the walls were completely white, and these openings would just kind of appear. Like either the door would open up vertically and it would just be there. It wasn't like you saw like the outline of these doors or these entryways or anything. So it was just kind of like you walk up the stairs and then there it is. You're where you're going to be. So the two beings that are escorting Betty took her to a circular room, and she, within the circular room, she described it as like a dome shape. So like a completely white dome, luminescent, because she couldn't figure out when she recalled this under hypnotic regression, they asked her, where were the lights? What's the light source? Like, you're telling us it's bright. So, you know, where's the light coming from? And she was just kind of, it's coming from everywhere. It's. The whole
ship's illuminated.
The whole inside is luminescent.
Yeah.
So they took her into this dome shaped room, and they kind of said, you know, wait here. In so many words,
we'll be like, right with you.
Yeah, we'll be right with you.
You're
you
know, up next.
The quiz. The
here's
Quazga
some old magazines.
Will be right
here's some
in.
Old People magazines. You know, just sit here and hang out for a bit.
It's funny. It's Reader's Digest in Canada. We don't do the people.
Fucking like a 12-year-old National Geographic magazine.
Yep.
Yeah.
So within this, she at this point, she is visibly, during hypnotic regression, they described her as kind of getting anxiety. Cause she's like, why are they having me wait here?
I wonder
why. Are you leaving
why?
Me by myself in this weird ship? I don't know what is going on. Why would you just leave me by myself? You know,
these you didn't get anxious kind of when random motherfuckers just floated through your door.
Yeah. That floated through your door and literally even abducted you.
Yeah. That's still okay,
no big
cool.
deal.
Yeah,
but,
cool.
but they're nice because they unpaused your daughter for a second. Like we're fine. Everything's fine here. That's nothing, cool. nothing to worry about.
Be chill, Betty.
Cool.
So kind of to
being a real Karen right now.
In order to kind of allay her anxiety and to get her through this experience and reliving this experience, they kind of asked her, you know, calm down, take a look around, describe what you're seeing to us. And she described seeing things like what she described as some sort of like leaf motif, like on the ceilings and on the walls. She described seeing things that looked like, I guess she described them like shields of some sort. I didn't really say whether what kind of shield, whether they're circular or the kind of wedge shaped shields that you see. She said she could see on some of the walls there were what looked to be like raised buttons, and then on another wall there seemed to be some sort of like rolled up scrolls or something.
Scrolls.
What kind of waiting room is this? Isn't there supposed to be like a fish tank and like those posters of like the cats hanging from something, like have hope, teamwork. You know what I mean?
Determination.
Yeah. Or that lighthouse with the water fucking, you know?
Yeah. They had her in this kind of, you know, they had her in the trance, and they kind of had her body paralyzed so much. So it's not like she could move.
She's
so they just kind of like stuck her there and just like, okay, wait here. They didn't even let her sit down or anything.
So that's why she's anxious. She's fucking paralyzed. Were they upset with her for being anxious? I don't understand. They're like,
stop crossing your arms.
Yeah. Like, why are you upset? you're paralyzed. Like, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. It's
fine.
Yeah,
and you got friggin' Quagmire in his white robe telling her she's going to go get more comfortable.
Yeah, I'm getting ready.
Giggity, giggity. He's
throwing his sash on.
Oh, man.
So after a certain amount of time, these same two beings returned, and they asked Betty to follow them to the center of the room, where in the center of the room, after they all three of them gathered there, it seemed to lower in, like it lowered downwards. So this elevator or something like took them down, and they asked her to exit through another opening and stand under what they described to her as, you know, she's like, I don't want to get out here. And they're like, no, you have to stand in this thing. It's a type of cleansing device.
Oh, Jesus. Right?
Sterilizing ray.
Buddy, they're going to give her a fucking prison shower to get ready for fucking Quasar. This is not good.
Yeah.
This is going
so fast.
This
is all shaping up poorly for her.
Yeah.
She described it as some sort of like type of platform with a type of some sort of light coming down. When she stepped into it, it enveloped her, and what she felt like was solid white light, like she couldn't see anything beyond the edges of this device or whatever. And after she, you know, stepped out, they took her to another room, and they said, you know, enter into this room and change into this garment.
Fuck, so, man, this is there. It's like it enters the light or it gets the hose again.
Yeah.
This is not good, man. I'm telling you, Wild Horse is going to be playing. He's coming out with his fucking whatever he's got between his legs tucked. That's not good.
So the garment that she described that they had prepared for her was this type of it's a garment. It was kind of like it had a silver clasp in the front, like where
sounds
the neck
like,
was.
It like sounds like some type of like Princess Leia type
blouse.
Of sex blouse.
Right. Sexy and blouse. It was like there. She's described as having slits down the sides and down the back. And the front is just kind of open.
Oh,
they didn't give her
no.
any kind of like undergarment or anything. It was just kind of open.
Oh, sorry, Betty.
Oh, Betty. Feel for you, girl. That's...
Front, yeah, says front mostly open.
But I wonder, like, was Betty like kind of like, oh no, or was she like, we're on a ship, it's all good?
No,
she's paralyzed.
Oh, so she couldn't even cover up.
Her modesty, you know, was still there intact. So she was definitely. She said, I didn't like it. So you know, I tried to cover myself as much as possible with the garment that they gave me. But you know, I put it on.
Yeah, who are we dealing with here? Bill Cosby.
Good one.
So after she changed into this garment that they provided for her, they led her into another room that was a complete dome. And again, this one is all illuminated from all sides. And
lots of leather and chains everywhere.
So Quazga enters into the room. Wild Horses is playing.
No.
Yeah.
This is where it would start playing too, because it's about to get weird.
Would you flog me? I'd flog me.
Would you probe me? I'd probe me real hard.
Wild Horses was not playing, but Quazga has now entered in with a new...
He's changed too.
...swanky suit. Silver suit, not the blue ones that they were wearing before. He's got this
Let
shiny silver suit
the
on.
The front's open.
What do you think?
Completely covering, and I imagined it as being one of those, you know, the silver heat suits or the sauna suits.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that. Heat shock treatments, heat shock proteins.
Right.
Heat shock protein, yeah, big time. Yeah. Elk meat.
Does this alien do jujitsu?
Is he bow hunt?
They might. They're getting ready to.
Well, you got to prepare for the pig babies.
So within this room, Betty described also there being a type of flat rectangular platform in the middle. So you can kind of guess what's going on. They placed Betty on this. She doesn't remember how exactly. She just remembers kind of just being placed on this block in the middle of this room. So it's essentially an examination room.
Yeah, you can't move. You don't remember. You got roofied.
Space roofies.
Either they roofied her, or what she reported is the way that they kind of took away her anxiety or some type of anesthesia or whatever. It was what they would just touch her head, and then her fears and anxiety would kind of just go away.
That was a little bit of acid on the fingertip, on the temple, absorbed through the skin with the sweat. Everything will be okay. And that's why everything's illuminating.
That's terrifying, man.
Same.
I don't understand.
So she definitely would need a bunch of it, because the next thing they do is they pull what seemed to pull out from out of the air, not out of the air, but like above her, were these long,
huge needles.
What do you mean, like pull it from behind her ear? Like, ooh.
Not behind her ear. No, I'm saying like from the ceiling. Like they drop down from the ceiling.
Yeah, come down.
Wait, hey, Betty, what do you got over there behind your ear?
Fucking needle. What's this? Needle.
Ooh, bet you impressed now, eh?
They insert these. They have two of them, and they inserted into her left nostril.
Gave her the old COVID test.
Oh, Jesus. Right? So bad.
That goes
so
up in bad. There. So bad. And the other one was inserted into her navel.
Oh. Like right through the belly button.
Right through the belly button.
So this is not like, this is like a terrible magic trick.
Yes.
But
not
first
fun.
It was the behind the ear, and now it's like cutting her in half, poking shit in her.
Not so
the final countdown.
She remembers or recalls Quazga remarking that they were, you know, she's like, why are you doing this to me? What is going on, you know, in her head? And they can kind of, you know, if they're communicating telepathically, they can kind of sense what's going on. And through her mind, Quazga responded to her questions being that they were measuring her for light, is what he said. Didn't really. She's like, what is that? I don't know. And he's just like, we're just measuring you for light. It's in there. Like, we're just measuring.
Didn't they think
it
was like something to do with, she thought it may have been something to do with like creation or something.
Right. They seem to have either mentioned something, you know, in their telepathic conversations, or she picked up on something about them searching for something to do with creation, or her missing something to do with creation. Now,
I remember her being like, she was talking in an interview being very upset, because at first, while they're searching for the light, they were like, well, we don't find a lot of light in you. You have these spots behind your knee, and you know, and it's not really going well. And she like pleaded with them, like, no, I have light. Don't doubt my light. I shine bright. Don't doubt it.
Right. So they did, you know, they kind of said that you have some bits that aren't isn't all light. There are spots that are missing or things like that. But to go back what they said about the things about creation, Betty had actually had a hysterectomy after the birth of her her daughter
kid?
Cindy,
her youngest kid. Yeah.
So, you know, that might have had something to do with it, saying that you know, she had.
Well, that could be some of that miscommunication, because we know there's been like some message lost in translation before. So them saying that is like, they could just be like trying to relay to her, not really knowing how, be like, hey, we see that you can't have kids. Like, you can't create.
Yeah, we got fucking...
You've lost the ability, the light to create.
Quasar here is like, about to throw an alien baby in you, and he can't. So this isn't going to work
for
us.
Like, yeah, he's like, you lost the light.
You lost the light, lady. This was a mistake. Get the fuck off our table.
He cinched up his robe.
Yeah. Wasted everybody's time.
Examination. Shit goes zero to total recall really fast.
Yeah, let's get it going.
They have the one device that's going up her nose. She says that, you know, when she's describing the experience, she's saying like, it's crunching through something. It punctures through something in the front of her head. Like, she's saying that she can feel it. The aliens
described it as being painful. She described being in pain.
But the aliens bring you love.
Right. No, and so
drilling
this,
through your fucking
but they
skull.
Managed to withdraw the needle wire, and out comes what she described
her brain.
Something. It was holding on to something when it came out.
Yeah, her brain is gone.
Well, it seemed to be, she's described it as some type of like small ball with tiny points on
they
it.
They fucking.
It took her pineal gland.
Buddy, they stuck a fucking coat hanger up her nose and just fucking spun it around a bit and pulled it out.
While the one that was inserted into her navel, this one, it just kind of passed in, and I don't know, it just moved around. She said she could feel it moving around her gut, so I don't know what it was doing down there. Either that was the, you know, that's part of the whatever the fuck's going on. I don't know.
At this point, yeah, we don't.
Well,
I imagine,
like, this is what I'm thinking, is that they have, you know, the ability to walk through walls. So like, maybe they have some sort of like, they put the device down and they have, it's like a non-invasive like look, like it's in you, but it's not really in you. And that's how they're seeing that. They're like, oh, you've lost the light. Like you've lost the light. You can't create. And maybe that's what they mean by that. Maybe it's not like you've lost the light as some other meal. It's like, you can't give birth anymore. And like, that's how they describe it in their.
So what do you mean? Are you trying to say it's some type of
sexy
like
alien culture?
X-ray?
Yeah.
But they,
and they're just giving
they punctured
her
stomach, though.
And seems like something through her nose, too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so the nose thing's
what if they
weird.
Put some type of, like, fucking nanobot in her that fucking starts zipping around?
Well, after they remove the needle wire from her, you know, from her midsection, after they remove that one comes out. She recalls another type of device being lowered from the ceiling, which she described as some sort of, like, glass plastic eye. It looked very similar to some sort of eye. Kind of lowered it down, went close to her stomach, and just stayed there for a few moments, and then retracted back into the roof.
That sounds horrifying.
That stole her soul.
Yeah.
Stole.
Jesus.
Stole something.
Right? So after this whole ordeal, Betty is returned to the dressing room, and they have her change back into her regular clothes.
They just throw her clothes at her.
Fucking walk of shame.
Get changed.
Here. Yeah.
You don't have enough light.
You don't get to keep that.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
No light for you.
So after they've had her dressed back into her old clothes, she recalls re-entering the same kind of tube elevator as before, but it opened up into a different corridor. When they floated down this track, which she described, some kind of was just like, it's not very wide. I think she said it was like 9 inches wide or something. Cause she said, they said, you know, how big is this track? And she pointed to a clipboard, that was in front of her that one of the investigators was holding. And it's, you know, it's about that wide.
So she's going down a 9-inch fucking tube.
It's just no the track that they're floating on. They're not walking. Yeah. It's just kind of like they're just moving along. They're people mover or whatever.
Conveyor belt.
They enter into another half cylinder room that she remarked as resembling a type of Quonset hut. So if you've been on a military base, they're kind of like those half cylinder houses.
Yep.
You know, those buildings.
Like a yurt?
What?
A yurt?
Like a yurt?
I would consider that a yurt.
Like a yurt. Okay. She said Quonset. You know, I had to look it up exactly what Quonset? It is, but it's like, yeah, it looks like one of those bunker houses or whatever. It's just like
okay,
one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
So
we all know a weird word for it that we recognize.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it's like, everybody has
it looks
a word
like one
for
of those
it.
Fucking shops, like those shitty
yeah.
shops.
Yeah. I know what you're saying.
I'm not picturing
so this room.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
one of those ones.
Something like this.
Yeah. It's kind of like a hanger a little bit.
Yeah. Kind of like a
sure.
Easy to set up hanger.
Within this room, she describes seeing these plastic glass or these chairs that seem to be made out of some sort of glass or plastic material. The beans placed Betty into one of these chair devices. She remarks seeing that there's four chairs. She describes seeing four chairs. One of them was slightly different from the others, having some type of like metal panels like in the on the armrest. Maybe or buttons or something like that. But she was placed in one of the ones that didn't have that. After they placed her in this chair, she said she remarked it's a feeling that these chairs somehow draw. She could kind of tell that they were drawing moisture from her. She kind of hypothesized that it could perhaps some type of like refrigeration or something because she remembers feeling a bit cold the first time she sat down in one of these. Now, she sits down in this chair and then over the chair, like a plastic covering or some type of the same material that the chair is made of is lowered down over her and it perfectly covers her and her seat.
Oh, no.
Now,
so Ziploc.
It covers her except for when, you know, she drew it out. And from her experience, she spoke about that it covered everything except pretty much like her nose and mouth. But it was like a clear plastic. And then another set of tubes lowered down and one, you know, went over the covering of her mouth and one went over the covering of her nose. And then the beans kind of told her, like, don't worry, don't worry.
It's just CPAP. And it's all good.
They were continually reassuring her to tell her everything's okay because you kind of would have to at this point.
Yeah. That's
yeah. By this point, I wouldn't trust. If you're trusting this far, you got to be at your end of your. At end of the trust here because you've had your brain punctured, your navel punctured, now you're ziplocked.
That's fucking crazy.
Now this part goes zero to the abyss real quick because now they fill up this chair covering that she's encased in. They start filling it up with some type of liquid.
Oh, shit.
Right?
They're putting her in one of those pods from the Matrix.
She also remembers after they fill it up, she remembers them administering something, like she said, like some type of syrup or something was like was dripped into her mouth or something like that, and it had like a type of euphoric effect.
What kind of syrup?
She just said sweet type of syrup. So it tasted sweet. And then once she tasted it, it gave her a type of like euphoric effect. It was kind of almost like an anesthetic of some type.
That's a maple syrup for sure then.
Yeah.
It's a cibicillin infused syrup right there.
Something's going on. Yeah. There's some fucking...
She recalled having a feeling of some type of like vibration. She said like in a whirlpool of some type. And then after this, they drained... That like it was like she was in there for a certain amount of time. She's not quite sure how long, because I guess, you know, at this point, like time has no meaning when you don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But they after this feeling of euphoria and the vibrations kind of subsided, she was removed out of the chair. They drained the liquid from the thing. These beings that were with her, the two that were with her, it wasn't Quazga. It was two other different beings that had, you know, escorted her. They donned these type of black hood like coverings over their faces, right? What they're still, and they're wearing now the silver fluorescent suits, I think similar to the ones that Quazga wore during the examination.
And Betty said she didn't need a face covering because she had long black hair.
Yes.
That's what she said.
So,
okay.
All right. All cool. Right.
So they leave out of the chairs. They get back on this track that had led them into this thing. And now it leads them out down another corridor, which she said it seemed like a type of like subway corridor. She you know, remarked on it being something to resemble like a subway.
She's
subway
still in the same 20-foot ship.
Well, that's the question. Yeah. Now, when they said that they filled this thing up with some type of liquid, my head jumps to the Expanse, where it's like, you know, you put somebody in a crash couch, like in the Expanse, science fiction novels, during space travel, or like they have like high G maneuvers, they will put them into what are like these, they call them like crash couches. And later in the series, like they have these things where they basically, they submerge you in kind of like a gel like substance so that you are able to kind of, withstand, and then they inject you with a bunch of drugs because you get, so your body can withstand the G forces and the acceleration of like a ship of some type, right? Whether right. or not that was them, because they didn't seem to have any problem overcoming like motion and like acceleration, you know, just moving the way that they were moving. Could have been something else, whether it was some type of space travel, maybe her body or mind couldn't handle it. I don't know, but.
Is this when she started? She floated through, like a mirror, pretty much.
Right. So she, as they floated down this corridor, they exited the corridor into what she described as a type of some other. It wasn't Earth anymore. So they had left the ship at some point, or they have left Earth at some point. She described the first thing is they go through this kind of mirror-like substance that looked like some type of portal.
Portal tech.
And when they go through it, and now. She described this place as being like completely red, like the atmosphere was red, not like Mars, but everything, like the light in everything was like just a shade of everything. The color was red. The lighting was red. And she described seeing types of buildings, which, you know, in her mind, she compared them to buildings being built of stucco or cement. And she was shocked by the appearance of these wholly different creatures than the ones that were escorting her. She described seeing these types of creatures that were seemingly headless. They had like large, they had like fingers that ended in pads. They were very short, maybe 3 feet tall, and they were climbing over these buildings like she said, like monkeys.
Little frog and people.
They didn't have heads so much as they had like two eye stalks sprouting out like where the neck would be. Normally,
I pictured like the little thing from Ah, Real Monsters.
Oh, yeah, the green guy.
So wait, who holds his own eyes.
Yeah,
she's been transported.
Oh, no, that's not the
she's been guy. Transported to a different dimension or just a different world. She doesn't really
could
know
be either one. At
buddy,
this point.
I think she was transported. Okay, hear me out here. I think she was transported to either the Dolce base or Area 51, and the people in the black masks. We're actually humans that were like, we can't let her see us because she'll make some sort of connection that there's humans here, and what that's weird. We can't have that at all. We can discredit her if she's saying that it's, you know, these weird these aliens wearing these.
Why the
suits.
Fuck? Why would humans kidnap another person? Like, we know. Why do we got to do all these?
They're just watching the experiment. They're just there to observe.
No, because the aliens that she's been with the entire time are the ones that put on the black masks.
Well, she didn't say that. She said she just saw them. Oh, did she?
Yeah,
she did. Oh, okay. Never mind then.
She's not there. She's
because,
in a different
because
planet.
After they exit, after they go through this area of red, she said that they passed through another portal that was covered with like a membrane of some type. And after they passed into that, through that membrane, they entered into another, what she described as a beautiful area. Everything was a bit green. She said it's now like a green area. So she saw things like vegetation. She saw water that was kind of covered by mist in some sections. The beings that she was with were able to remove their black hoods at this point. They said they could took them off and just either like put them in a pocket or something. They took them off. They were able to remove them at this point.
Maybe masks are mandatory. Maybe they're in the middle of a pandemic. Everybody has to wear a mask.
Yep. Just showing her the future, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was.
So she says she remembers seeing things like, again, some type of life form other than the beans. She said she saw something that resembled like some type of animal that was like a cross between a fish and a bird.
Well, it's interesting because they also, I couldn't find anything on it, but you know, it said they had an emblem of some sort of bird on their little outfit.
Yeah.
Eagle.
And eagle, is it an eagle, right? Who knows? Is it a phoenix? I wish we would have more description on what that was, because then later when it says, like, you know, is this a phoenix? Like, that would make more sense to me because that's the emblem on their little uniforms too.
Right. So when they're proceeding through this green area, this beautiful area that she described, like they're still moving at a pretty constant pace on this black track. They're pretty much floating through the sky at a high altitude above. And she said that they floated out over what seemed to be a city. And she described the buildings as being very science fiction like, very different in shapes and sizes. They were domes within the city. She couldn't tell if there was a dome over the entire thing. She said that most of it was like surrounded by a mist at some point, so she couldn't see a horizon of any type.
What was the Dan, what was the thing I read? What was the white pyramid like structure with an Egyptian head on the top?
Oh yeah,
right. So they passed.
I found that fascinating.
The largest, most notable structure was this type of pyramid. And from the drawings and stuff, it's not exactly a pyramid. She described it as a pyramid.
Pyramid-like.
It's kind of, yeah, it's almost got like three sides almost. It's like a three-sided pyramid. And like one side was flat, like completely flat. And she described the other sides as being kind of having indentations in the middle of each side, and the edges were kind of smoothed out or flattened. And then on top of it, she described to have seen some type of head that she described as being Egyptian. I mean, that's the closest thing that she could come up with it in her brain and how she interpreted it was Egyptian.
Akhenaten, for sure.
Wearing the
alien king. There you go.
It's Akhenaten, for sure.
Right. So she said it was wearing the head. It seemed to be wearing the headdress of like a pharaoh, like the Nemes hat, not like the
pointy one, the long one that comes Nemes. Down. Yeah.
Yeah, the long one that has the flaps and the stripes on it. Yeah, yeah. Comes down the shoulders.
I find that very interesting that she saw these white pyramids. I was trying to find out, Dan, and maybe you'll know. I should have prepped you with this, so I don't expect you to know this one. Was it widely known that the pyramids were most likely white with white limestone?
Oh, how long have they known that? Oh, I don't know. I think off the top of my head.
I think for a long time, because the second, like not the Great Pyramid, but the second pyramid of Giza still has a lot of it, the covering on it.
Yeah, there's still pieces of it that are still there.
Because I found that very interesting that she was describing white pyramids. And then I'm like, well, that's interesting because is that information that she would have known too in 1967 that like these pyramids were most like the pyramids in Egypt, the Giza pyramids were most likely covered in like white limestone and capped with a gold top?
It's not 1967 though. This is 10 years later when she was hypnotized, which would have been 1977, which been when fucking Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out.
Oh, he's calling it early. He's calling it early.
Full of shit.
So after they traveled through the city, they traveled over the skies of the city. She said that they moved on towards what seemed to be a large collection of crystalline structures that were giving off like rainbows of light, extremely beautiful.
Cool.
And they seemed to pass through it, or she passed into it and through it. And then like almost instantly she said she was kind of transported into just this area of, in front of her was this huge eagle, a huge bird. She said it's very much a bird.
Very eagly.
It's got to be the same bird on their crest.
On their crest of their arm of their toga, yeah. Whatever the fuck they're wearing.
And as soon as she entered into the presence of this bird, she described this bird as kind of like it was luminous to the point of like not almost not being able to look at it. She described feeling an intense heat radiating from this bird. To the point where she described also like sparks kind of flying off of it. And this image of this bird seemed to just burst into flame, or, ooh, you know, an explosion of energy and light. And then she remembers after experiencing this very intense, very uncomfortable heat, you know, when she was in the hypnotic regressive state, she was, you know, she's like, ouch, this hurts. Like, I don't want to be here. It's too hot. It's too hot. You know, they had to calm her down and tell her, you know, it's, you're not experiencing that right now. You know,
Betty,
bring her back
Phoenix,
down.
Okay. Stop making a big deal about it.
Yeah. Just a Phoenix. No big deal. It's just a Moltres.
Yeah.
Right. So she, you know, making the Phoenix connection is apt, because after that, this whole experience of light and heat, there seemed to be a small fire burning down in front of her, and there's just like a collection of ashes, which she observed to reform into this, like she described it as like a fat cray worm. And then she heard this voice within her head asking if she understood. Do you understand what you have seen? And of course, you know, she's saying that she responded that, no, I don't understand any of this. I don't know what's going on.
It was a fucking bird and now it's a worm. What am I supposed to take from this? What's going on?
You've seen it. You've understood, you know, and also to the effect that she has been chosen, right? She is the chosen one. You know, you will understand everything. You will help humanity to understand everything. You are the chosen one. And it just kind of, you know, like re-emphasize that fact over and over again that she has chosen.
You witnessed the birth of Earthworm Jim.
Yeah. The greatest Super Nintendo video game.
I was just going to say that was my favorite Super NES game.
Buddy, so
in
good.
History.
So fun.
So fucking good.
That was it. That's all they wanted to show her. Like, this is what you're missing by being born in the 60s.
Yeah.
Enjoy your Pong,
born fucking too loser.
Yeah. You could have Earthworm Jim.
I don't think she felt like a deep understanding that she did, you know, she did kind of compare this to some kind of like religious experience that she had this, like she's feeling like she should understand something and she feels like she should learn something, but she doesn't know what it is. She doesn't understand. And, you know, it just told her that you are the chosen one and that you will observe through the sacrifice of my son or something like that. It's kind of. Yeah,
this sounds to me, like this to me starts playing like some sort of, like when we get into this part of this abduction story, it really starts sounding like some sort of like LSD or DMT trip, like some big kind of trip. Because I've done enough shrooms before where I've had similar experiences where like I go to bed after doing them and then I have the most like wild tripped out dreams where it's like I'm talking to other beings. It's crazy. So I was like, this part of it, I'm like, this sounds like she was tripping out and just didn't know what was going on.
Just at home, her and her hubby decided to pop a little,
I think,
LSD.
Maybe
67 this happened.
So yeah,
either that or they had fucking lead pipes,
lead poisoning.
So after she's told this kind of, you know, you will understand, you are the chosen one. She remembers passing back through the crystals and then back out through the red and green areas, back through the original corridor. The beings escorted her back to the Quonset room with the glass chairs, and they put her back into the seats. And she did make a point to remark, and actually found that kind of strange as well, is that there are four seats, but none of the beings that she's with, they don't occupy any of the other seats. When she goes into it, it's only her and then three other empty seats.
So they got they've sent three other people before,
I'm kind of wondering, like, oh, what did the beings do? Were they just like standing around? Like, they don't need that chairs, or those chairs are designed for someone floating. Else besides themselves.
They just sit, they float.
Yeah.
Did they ever tell her what she's chosen for?
We get to that.
Listen, I don't see, if you look at this, I don't like, you got to look at it as a whole. There's so much misinterpretation and like, you know, with the food and stuff that I think when she's saying like, oh, I've been chosen. I don't think that they're saying that like, it in some sort of biblical sense of like, you're the chosen one. It's like, we've chosen you. One. Like, just very simple. Like, we chose you. No big deal. We chose you.
Well, they did.
You've been chosen.
Picked her up. You were the closest person.
But it's not
saw.
Like when Let's she's like, it. She, the way like she describes it is if it's some like biblical, like, you've been chosen. Like, oh, my, you're the one. I'm like, no, it's just, you've been chosen. Like, we chose someone and it's you. You like, I find it very, like, I like to think of it as very calculated of, like, someone be like, yeah, we chose you. We've chosen you. You were there. We chose you.
Yeah. Through her experience, she did, you know, she chose to kind of either to keep herself from going crazy, because you might, I don't know, but she chose to kind of realize a lot of the what they were saying, this information that are passing on to her, or these revelations. She chose to kind of realize this stuff within the context of the Bible, because she remembers kind of, you know, when they asked her questions like, you know, do you know? She's like, I know that, you know, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus Christ, these things, you know, and she used that to kind of, whether she conceptualize or a lot of this information and these things that they were asking of her, you know, she would answer with the Bible or teachings from the Bible. That's what she kind of relied on to keep her mind in one piece, I suppose. You know, she remarked on the return trip that the beings seemed to be a lot more sensitive to her, because at least one of them was like, when they put her back in the chair this time, they actually like knocked on the glass and kind of inquired, like, are you okay in there, Betty? Like, you know, hey. Like tapped on the glass, like, you okay
you
this
know
time
what I mean?
Or
like,
what?
Doesn't that sound like such a human, like from everything we've heard of the telepathy and all this other stuff, this to me, like when I was doing my research and got to this part, I was like, this seems like a very human interaction now of like, you're right in there. You're right in there, Betty. Like it seems out of place.
No, these guys just know everything else. They witnessed all the fucked up shit Quasar did to her. And they're like, we feel terrible. Yeah. She got really weird.
Yeah, you're right in there.
We need to see if this chick's okay. Things went way too far. This guy's
you
a weirdo.
Okay in there, buddy?
And then Quasar comes to you like, you must forget.
Yeah.
Dude, this is like this is the alien version of MK Ultra. What happened here.
Yeah.
So they bring her back to what seems to be the ship.
Midnight Climax.
you know, they pass through whatever if it's some sort of interdimensional corridor or whatever, but they seem to bring her back to the original ship, back where her home was. And they tell her that Quasga wants to speak to her before they leave or whatever. And, you know, Quasga, you know, she's trying to ask all these questions like, you know, what is going on? What is going on? And you know, he's like, you must forget is what she gets from him. Essentially, he tells her that you must forget. And after he says these words, you know, and he starts telling her, like, you're going to have to forget for now. She described his face changing from the quintessential gray. One eye became completely black and the other eye became completely white, like luminescent white. And some type of, she described as like an antennae or some type of feelers
into a fucking
grew out
paralyzer.
Along the fucking top of his eyes. while he was talking to her and telling her that we've given you information. We've put stuff inside your head.
Gave her formulas or something, right?
Right. They gave her formulas and they said that we're not going to give you any more until man, collectively understands these formulas.
Like, why could be so fucking vague?
Is this before or after she got the blue book?
They told her that they come to help humans. They love humans.
We bring you love. Yeah, right.
Why do you say it like that?
That's the gist of it, is that they're like, we're doing this. Love is the answer. Love is everything. Humans have to deal with, but humans first have to deal with this type of, he doesn't really elaborate on what it is, but he says there's
listen,
some
that's
type
a hard
of corruption
sell.
On
that's
Earth.
A hard sell to fucking Betty Andreessen, who just got a fucking needle in the navel and
right
then
the
in
cranium.
The nose and fucking spun it around and had her all front showing and everything and paralyzed. Like, love is the answer, really? Like, fuck you.
After all that, you're going to send me into another dimension. You're going to fucking probe my belly button, my brain. You're going to show me a phoenix going into ashes and a worm coming out. It's all super cryptic. And then they go, you must forget.
Yeah, I wish I could. I'm going to have fucking PTSD after that.
It's funny because, like, again, to me, this sounds like some sort of trip, because I've had trips where it's like you figure out that you've gained some like universal knowledge, and like in your head, you're like, oh my God, I've had this eureka moment. And then as quick as you get it and you understand it completely and intimately, and so you're just like, I get everything, you lose the ability to even describe what it was that you just learned, and you forget even how to communicate it. It's a weird thing. I've been that high before. So when she says this stuff, I was like, is she describing like a bad trip? Because I've been there. And that's what this sounds like to me.
I've been there too, and I thought I was God for a bit.
Yeah, and then you come back and it's like, I will remember this. I will remember how to tell everyone we are one. Everything's one. It's all even praise the light. We're all one. And then you're like, as you come out, you're like, I don't remember. Maybe I wasn't supposed to tell anyone.
What do you mean? You remember it now. You're talking about right now.
Yeah, you remember.
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, but in the moment, it's in the moment, it's different than how you remember.
You know all the intricate details. You just have this like universal understanding.
No, you're just fucking stoned.
Our next pod week will be at the New England Institute for Hypnotism. Yeah. We'll be putting Katie into hypnotic regression.
That'd be fun to be hypnotized like that.
No, I think you have to be. Honestly, I'm too much of a cynic. I don't think I'd be like, this isn't going to work. And I think as soon as you're kind of like that, I think that's why it probably didn't work very well on her dad, is because he's like some hardened, like,
I'm believing this shit.
Bullshit. Dumb.
Yeah. And so he's just so against it. And I just have a hard time, like, not making jokes. So, like, I don't think I could do it.
You probably fuck with the guy, pretend you're hypnotized for a second, and like, just kidding.
The interesting thing that I also found with this that I was thinking about was that, they say they give her this like some sort of knowledge. And then I'm like, well, she doesn't share any knowledge with anyone. And then I was starting to think that, like, like later on in subsequent interviews and stuff, she really says that, like, that, we're all one, we're all connected. And I wonder if it's some sort of like 100 monkeys kind of thing where it's like they put that in one person, that knowledge, and it eventually spreads to all humanity. Like, we're some sort of like hive mind, even though we don't realize it.
So the beans also did say that others had secret in her mind. She wasn't the only one. They were saying that they had put information in other people as well. She was not the only one.
I thought she,
like,
was
could
the
you
chosen
imagine
one.
If that's what it is, like, they're coming down just giving, like, because they're like, if we implant this knowledge with a certain amount of people, the entire species will just get it.
Just by osmosis, just being out there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they made the point to kind of, or they seemed to try to make the point to Betty that it was like, she kept asking, like, what do we need to understand? He's like, you have to understand, you have to explore, you have to search within yourselves. You know, the technology that you're pursuing isn't the right kind of technology is kind of what he was seemed to be getting at, that we needed to be developing technology more along a spiritual sense of technology.
Okay.
And not a destructive, something of making fucking atomic bombs.
I could definitely interpret it that way.
Because if you think about this time, I mean, this is definitely
it's still Cold War.
Heyday of like making nukes, testing nukes. I mean, when was that big show of force where they blew up the one in the water there? What year was that?
The bikini.
Is it Bikini Atoll?
Underwater. Yeah.
What year was that?
50 something.
I don't know. But from like 1950 to 1980 or 90, they're fucking blowing up nukes every like fucking 4 days, it felt like.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say they weren't making nukes, because they definitely were. So I'm like, when this lines up nicely with that, right?
Yeah. So it's definitely depths of Cold War. It is definitely we have harnessed the power of the atom and, you know, exploded atomic bombs, hydrogen bombs. We're there, you know, we're on this track, or that's what they seem to kind of be saying or implying, that humans had some sort of corruption that they had to deal with. We have to proceed beyond that and seek to understand these formulas or these equations that they have. And until we understand that, then the information and the secrets that are locked within Betty's head and these other people that they alluded to will remain locked, or they will remain locked away.
I like that theory though, Braden, about if say they like they do this to a bunch of people, and we've talked about it before, like say you have an idea for an invention, but you have an idea and you never really follow through, but you think about it for a while, and then like the next week or the next month or the next year, like, I fucking thought about that. So what?
Same, yeah, laser bullets.
So yeah, that's what I mean. So what if these people are being instilled with these ideas and they never act on them, but enough people do it and it becomes like, we haven't done a case.
Like the Akashic Records. Like, it's just out there, right? It's there for someone to grab.
Yeah, we haven't done a case file on it yet, but exactly. Like, all, like, that's this in the human consciousness. And if enough people know about it, maybe it, like, spawns the idea. Then you get a guy like...
the spiritual awakening.
Then you get a guy like Elon Musk, starts inventing everything because he's a little greedy. He's taking all the human knowledge for himself.
Or he's just tapped in, right? Like he's tapped into some of this a little better, but maybe that's what it takes, right?
Or maybe he's an alien.
Maybe he's an alien just by himself.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe he's fucking Quasar.
The way he talks does seem, he's Quasar.
He's fucking Quasar. Or Quesada or whatever.
What is the fuck his name?
Quasga? So she, okay, to finish off the experience, to bring it close,
let's wrap
to it
up.
She takes the beans she remembers return Betty to her house, and she remembers them guiding her back to their bed, and they actually, utilizing what she described as some kind of like small balls of light. Like it was like light within glass. It wasn't just like an LED lamp or something like the orb. It was like an actual glass of light. And they use these to kind of, you know, move her family. Like they actually had the family kind of march. She said all the kids kind of lined up and marched upstairs to their beds and went to sleep, and everybody went to bed, and then, you know, woke up the next morning. She remembers waking up the next morning. The kids were up, everything, and nobody really remembered anything happening.
They didn't,
including her. She didn't really remember either.
She just felt like something was off, but didn't really remember what happened.
Right. Not until a couple days later that she kind of like start suspecting something was kind of.
So her whole family was frozen. They don't remember the experience. Was
well, the one
gone.
Daughter does. Like apparently the one daughter.
Bit. The one that was unfrozen.
She got to touch this blue book that she was given. And now
she
can speak and
the
write
blue book,
a different language.
This is the last bit. So because everybody get into the blue book. I remember asking this question. She left the book before they left, and they told her, like, you're going to keep this book.
For
so she had this book. And she knew with, you know, there's some sort of telepathic suggestion or something that she wasn't supposed to show anybody this book. So she had hid it in her closet while, you know, instructed not to show anyone. And she said that this book had contained, when she was asked about it under hypnotic regression, she said it contained initiation of mysteries. You know, it seemed to be 40, you know, composed of 40 thin pages. Like the first five pages, she said, were just like first three or five glowing white light from the pages. And then the subsequent pages had just strange symbols that didn't seem to be any language that she recognized. She compared it to Egyptian. So I assume she's talking about hieroglyphics.
Right.
So she couldn't read any of them. I think she said that she felt like she could understand some of the concepts that were within it sometimes, but she wasn't able to fully grasp all of it, or she wasn't supposed to yet. So this, while she was under hypnotic regression with some other investigators from like the Center of UFO Research and things like that, when they pressed her more about the book, at this point, Betty became like an interpreter for another alien being. Like an alien being was speaking through her.
A beacon.
And she just, you know, the alien introduced itself as being named Andantio or Andantio.
That's a great alien name right there.
It's pretty fucking cool.
Great. Yeah.
Andantio.
Sounds like Andrew's D&D character should have been named.
Yeah. So the researchers were trying to ask him, like, you know, what's in the book? You know, what are these formulas that are in the book?
And he's just kind of like,
what's in the book?
What's in that book? And they tried to, but he was just kind of like circling around everything. They asked her like, what about the formula? What's the first formula? What does it have to do with what? And he, is quoted as saying something like, to do with liquid that life has been removed from. Like there's no vibrations. It's perfectly still or something like that.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what still does that water. Mean? It's a band.
Everything vibrates. Yeah.
And they asked him all these questions, like if you read the book, most of the information I pulled from the Andreessen affair by Raymond Fowler, who was one of the UFO investigators involved intimately with this case.
Also been abducted. No big deal.
Also been abducted. And he also did the Allagash abductions, which we talked about.
But interviewing her, he's like, oh, you know what? I think I've been abducted, too.
Yeah.
This is bringing some things out.
Well, maybe that's how they work. Maybe that's how they work. Maybe someone gets abducted, then they meet someone else, and that person's now a target. They get abducted.
No, because he's talking to this chick, and he's like, this could be fucking lucrative. I'm going to write this fucking book. This shit happened to me. Let's get a sequel. Let's get a movie made.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after this point, you know, this alien being through her, like, wouldn't ask any more specific questions about the books. It was pretty much just all this stuff about, like, know yourselves. Love is the answer. Be careful of greed. And greed, greed, greed is bad. And just kind of back and forth with the investigators trying to get him to answer more stuff. But then they just kind of gave up because they're like, this guy isn't fucking telling us anything. So screw this. We're done. Like, the book. At some point, she said, would only last 10 days. Like, that was it. Like, so the book disappeared after 10 days. Just
went to the ether.
Self-destructed, whatever. It's gone.
Yeah.
This message will self-destruct in 10.
Spectre gadget. 9.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know why they gave her the book. If they put all this stuff in their head, I don't understand why they gave her the book that's going to be gone in 10 days. I don't. Part of me just doesn't.
What was the point of that? Yeah, I don't know.
What's with blue books? These are pretty popular in this whole alien thing, eh?
It's a great name.
What's final thoughts on the Andreessen case?
Conclude.
Zell, you believe her?
I feel like I'm on board with... sometimes when I think about aliens, I think that it is like I like to think of it maybe like a simulation thing. If they could come down here and just pause you and put you in suspended animation without doing anything, I feel like that is like a computer code thing. Like this is like a simulation theory thing.
Simulation.
Like they come down, the aliens don't have to do anything. All of a sudden you're just paused. They just have to think at you. They can put thoughts right in your mind. It doesn't make physical sense as far as we know how shit works. So maybe this was maybe this is the creators of the simulation that's coming down, checking out their programs.
Yeah, very much. I like that actually. I like it a lot. The one thing that I was thinking about that I found interesting was, you know, this description of these little uniforms is very similar to like Barney and Betty Hill's description and numerous others of the time is these aliens wearing these little uniforms, right? It makes me think that maybe it's to do with some sort of futuristic like time travel coming back in the past. They're doing tests on humans. It's because it's our evolved selves coming back. That's why they can kind of communicate with us, because they would still understand some of the language and whatnot, you know, over history.
Right.
I just found it interesting that it's, you know, very similar descriptions of these little suits. I find the first half to be very interesting and believable, because like you have one person who's like, yeah, maybe I saw some. Maybe I didn't. I don't really want to answer any more questions. That's it. And then you have, you know, Betty that is spilling the beans, and you have her daughter that is kind of cooperates a little bit. It's an interesting, there's a lot of information on this one. So it's definitely an interesting read for sure. Dan, what do you think?
It's always difficult to kind of, for me to like not believe something. She has a very detailed, a very lengthy narrative all put together with this whole thing, but it's also 10 years after the fact. I know regressive hypnosis has kind of been put off as bunk. It's not really a thing anymore. People have kind of discredited it or whatever. It's not, doesn't seem to be very accurate or thing. I know they set them up with lie detectors and stuff like that, but they, even then, that's like, if you've already convinced, lie detectors aren't even that accurate.
It's not a lie.
You can't.
You believe it.
You believe it.
Right.
Human mind is a powerful thing.
There's just a lot of stuff in here. Like, she doesn't answer really a lot of specifics about the stuff, especially these aliens, like love. Love is the answer. All that stuff.
We
it's
bring
like,
you love. Like,
anybody could say that. It's just, scary. Yeah, duh. And I don't know. But I don't know why she would create this narrative, because, you know, they administered to her psychological tests, or they said that they did. And
they,
she's not crazy. Yeah, she's not crazy.
Not crazy. They found her and her daughter both sane and.
Yeah, and she, you know, never really
As credible can be.
Yeah, you know, when they asked her, you know, would you want to write a book about these things? Like, why don't you write a book? She never really thought about it. She's kind of like, you know, if you think it would help people or, you know, something like that, you know, I could write a book, but she never seemed to really profit off of it.
What? Like, she it's not like she's Travis Walton giving limp handshakes at every alien con you go to.
The limpest handshake.
Yeah, she does interviews and stuff, but it's just like,
yeah.
Have you listened to her interviews, though? Like, she's, every interview I listen to, she gets prompted the entire time by her fucking husband.
Her new husband, I will say, I listened to some interviews with her new husband. And I think early on, Dan, like you said, she wasn't profiting from it. When she married her new husband, Bob Roca, Luca.
Yeah.
They do interviews with her, and like, I've listened to the Coast to Coast with her, and like, she's like, she sounds very modest. Like, she's just talking about her experiences, and then her husband will be like, yeah, I had experience too. Let me tell you about mine. And he butts in, tells it. And then, like Andrew said, he will prompt her the rest of the way. So it's almost like he's seen the money signs and he's like, we got to do that. Come on, come on, come on. And he's just like, remember when you saw this? Remember when you heard this, huh? And like, this narrative kind of changes.
And his story sounds exactly like hers.
Yeah, and then his story sounds similar. So it's very interesting to me, like, that dynamic. I find her less credible, like, later on when she's with her in interviews I listened to with her now husband. I didn't like. I got a sour taste in my mouth. But like, from the readings and like that stuff, Dan, I 100% agree. Like, she didn't really benefit from this in any way.
I don't think anyone who has an abduction story at the time, like, they don't benefit.
Travis
from
Walton.
No, at the start though, they don't benefit.
No,
like the first, when you first make that claim, especially back then, like, all you're benefiting from is being called a fucking lunatic, crazy person.
Yeah,
and then maybe years later. Because of that, because you were called a crazy person and maybe you lost your job or you couldn't gain employment because people knew your story, you're like, well, maybe I only have this one option left. Maybe I can only like sell this story and like write a book, or I can do radio shows because it's all I got left.
Andrew, what do you think?
Wait, can I guess?
Fake news?
Is it all bullshit for you? Or
this came out right around...
Same time as Close Encounters of the Third Kind, man. You know what though? I don't know. Like, I'm doing my best to open, to broaden my horizon and give this kind of stuff a chance. But like, I don't know. The problem with all these stories is there's never anything tangible. And
but how about this? She wrote in a year before. She wrote in a year before with her story.
What?
Right.
What do you mean? Sorry. Say it again.
When she first She responded to the ad saying, like, we're looking for people who may have had a UFO encounter.
Oh, and so she wrote in.
And she wrote in. That was a year before. So this, she would have wrote in like sometime in 76.
I meet fucking like on a daily basis. I'll meet people at work being like, hey man, like how's it going? Everything looks normal. You're in a normal house. Everything's good. And they're like, hey, we called you. We called 911 because there's microchips in my head and the government's controlling me.
Maybe there fucking is.
You will, but exactly. But it's like, fucking, I don't know, man. I don't know anymore. Like, yeah. Give me something. Like, I need to see something. I need to.
Andrew doesn't know it's real anymore.
No, I don't know. I'm trying. I'm really
the
fucking
trying.
The
world's an illusion.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a simulation. Right. I don't know.
Let's wrap this one up, man. This has been a long and good case file. I like it.
Great case. Really, at least, you know what? There's a lot of details to her encounter. It just. The credibility is super up for debate, but it's...
Hashtag look it up.
Yeah.
Here's the bad news that we went this long, and the bad news that I've been gone so long. The Randomtron, it rusts up. I'm in this humid weather. I was gone for a week. I left it outside.
You're lying.
Got some rust.
You're lying. It chose a fucking category that you did not like, and you got all diva-like and smashed it. Don't fucking lie.
This Randomatron's been here for a couple of years. It's been acting up lately. She might be cooked. Yep. We might have to fucking build a new one.
Listen, second thing, I'm not doing space news this week. We're not doing it now.
Space news. We're not doing space news. We went too long.
You guys don't get it now.
You don't get no fucking space news because we told you about a cool UFO case that went way longer than anticipated. But we will tell you some new Patreons. No,
you're not getting any space news because somebody called Zell a pinecone and he's upset.
Yeah,
it's done. That's He did. Call him a pine cone.
You call me a fucking pine cone, I'm not going to kill you.
Yeah, it didn't go over well.
Pine cone, potatoes, anything in like a round shape.
It's not good.
I just instantly hate it. I don't know why.
You call him a pear? Oh, man.
Oh, pear? I don't mind pears, actually. Delicious.
What about pear head? All right, pear head.
Yeah, pear head's fine. Doesn't bother. All right. Anyways, new Patreon supporters this week. William Van Tassel.
Woo! Woo! Oh, we forgot the NBA theme song kicking in.
Now we can't play that because we'll get fucking sued. But
yeah.
Leif Weimer. Cole Barden.
That's real.
Matthew. Just John. Jennifer Swope.
It's a real name.
Emily Johnson.
Fake name.
Jonah Hayes. Joss.
Real name.
Josted. Fake. That's made fake that one up.
Yeah, it's dumb. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you lose your creativity.
NZ _ Skunky fake. Buds. That's real.
Real name.
That's real. When did we record last? 20? Oh, we got one more, I think. No, actually, that's it. That's done. New Patreons this week.
All right, guys. Get on our Patreon. We got tons of stuff on there. Your boys got to go to the bathroom so bad.
Long case
file. But as we always say at the end of those episodes... These episodes, some episodes, keep those eyes on the skies.
Booyah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.